This ancient word comes from the first book of Samuel in the Hebrew scriptures, the 28th chapter. This is a wonderful translation of the whole Hebrew scripture by Robert Alter, the distinguished professor at UC Berkeley. This is his translation. And Samuel had died, and all Israel mourned him, and they buried him in Ramah, in his town. And Saul had taken away the ghosts and the familiar spirits from the land. And the Philistines gathered and came and camped in Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel, and they camped at Gilboa. And Saul saw the Philistine camp, and he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And Saul inquired of the Holy One, and the Holy One did not answer him, neither by dreams, nor by the casting of lots, or by the prophets. And Saul said to his servants, "Seek me out a ghost wife, that I may go to her and inquire through her." And his servants said to him, "There is a ghost wife in Endor." And Saul disguised himself and put on different clothes, and he went, he together with two men, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, "Conjure me, pray, a ghost, and summon up the one I say to you." And the woman said to him, "Look, you yourself know what Saul did, that he cut off the ghosts and the familiar spirits from the land. And why do you entrap me to have me put to death?" And Saul swore to her by the Holy One, saying, "As the Holy One lives, no blame will befall through this thing." And the woman said, "Whom shall I summon up for you?" And he said, "Samuel, summon up for me." And the woman saw Samuel, and she screamed in a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, "Why did you deceive me when you are Saul?" And the king said to her, "Do not fear, but what do you see?" The woman said, "A God do I see rising up from the earth." And he said to her, "What does he look like?" And she said, "An old man rises up, and he is wrapped in a cloak." And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed to the ground and did obeisance. And Samuel said, "Why have you troubled me to summon me up?" And Saul said, "I'm in dire straits, and the Philistines are fighting against me, and God has turned away from me and no longer answers me, neither through prophets nor dreams, and I called you to let me know what I should do." And Samuel said, "And why do you ask me when the Holy One has turned away from you and become your foe? And the Holy One has done to you as spoken through me, and the Holy One has torn the kingship from your hand and given it to your fellow man, to David. Inasmuch as you did not heed the voice of the Holy One, and you did not carry out God's burning wrath against Amalek, therefore has the Holy One done this thing to you this day, and the Holy One shall give Israel too, together with you, into the hands of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons are with me. The camp of Israel too shall the Holy One give into the hand of the Philistines." And Saul hastened and flung himself full length on the ground, and was very frightened at Samuel's words. And as you're moved, and we'll sing this Halloween carol, "God Rest Ye Merry Spirits All."
God rest ye merry skeletons, let nothing you affright. The spirits and the demons are coming out tonight to frolic in the witching hour before the morning's light. Oh, omens of evil and blood, evil and blood. Oh, omens of evil and blood. God rest ye merry spirits all, let nothing you dismay. Witches stirring bubbling cauldrons smelling of decay, to give you all to Satan's power before the break of day. Oh, tidings of horror and fright, horror and fright. Oh, tidings of horror and fright.
Seated. And thus I clothe my naked villainy with old odd ends stolen forth of holy writ, and seem a saint when most I play the devil. Once upon a time, long ago and far away, there lived a tall, extremely handsome, strong man named Saul. He was an Israelite of the tribe of Benjamin. Now it came to pass that the elders of Israel became concerned that they were the only country in their part of the world that did not have a king. Oh, they had a strong leader in the prophet, priest, judge, Samuel. But Samuel was not a king with all the potential glory a king and a kingdom promised. Besides, Samuel was getting old, and none of his sons was a worthy successor to the great judge. Still, Samuel, who seemed to have a direct connection to their God, Yahweh, kept telling them that Yahweh did not want them to have a king, that they didn't need a king, that Yahweh was all the ruler they needed. But the people were determined, and so Yahweh gave in, all the while warning them of their folly, the folly of their decision. Yahweh instructed Samuel to find the Israelites the king they so desired. Well, I suppose you might have guessed that after Samuel looked around, Yahweh directed him to that tall, handsome, and strong Benjaminite, Saul. Saul certainly looked every inch a king. So it was settled. Saul would wear the crown. In the beginning, Saul wore it well. But it appears that he harbored some underlying ambivalence about being king. Maybe anybody who wears a crown ought to experience a little ambivalence, maybe. Increasingly, he became less sure of himself than a king needed to be, especially in those days. And of course, looming over it all was the burden of reigning as king of a people whose God was not particularly happy to have a king at all. Well, it wasn't long before Saul's insecurity began to manifest. He showed signs of mental and emotional stress. He chose to follow his own counsel. He had terrible dreams. He had distress. He brought the young shepherd David in to sing and soothe his troubled spirit. Still, he chose to follow his own counsel and disobey Yahweh's direct command to obliterate an enemy, the Amalekites. So finally, he ended up in paranoid conflict with that young shepherd hero David, whom old Samuel had by then already anointed as his successor, given Saul's disobedience. Talk about a convoluted melodrama. Did you follow all that? I won't go back and repeat it. You can read it in 1 Samuel 28. the book of 1 Samuel, other parts too. But this all brings us to today's ancient word, a ghost story, if you will. It appears that David, frustrated with Saul's vacillation between embrace, oh, you're so wonderful, David, I need your music, and his threat, I'm going to kill you as soon as I find you. In order to save his own skin, had turned to the latest enemy of the Israelites, the Philistines, offering himself and his some 600 men in service to one of the Philistine warlords, a king named, one of the Philistine warlords. The Philistine army had moved deep into Israelite territory, and it was threatening to outflank Saul's army. The Philistines came from the west, but they were threatening from the west and the north, and they were cutting off the whole region of Galilee. They were literally cutting the country in half, a real threat to Saul. Poor King Saul is understandably terrified. His uncertainty about how to proceed is full-blown. He's tried everything he knows to tap into Yahweh's helpline, but without success. Dreams, casting lots, consulting prophets, none of it has brought any clear word from Yahweh about what Saul should do next. Sadly, Saul by now is a hollow man, a king without direction. What's he to do? Well, in desperation, Saul turns to a source he himself, undoubtedly at Samuel's urging, has outlawed. No necromancy in Israel, even though it was a common practice in that time and in that place. As a last resort, he decides he will try to consult the spirits or ghosts, even though he knows Yahweh disapproves of this practice. He's just adding insult to injury, right? For himself. The accepted practice for the times in consulting spirits is to engage in a medium, or as the text says, a ghost wife, a figure who so closely aligned with the spirits of those deceased that they can channel communication from beyond the grave. Usually they channel it in the sense that you've seen movies with seances where the figure speaks through the medium, right? Sometimes their voice changes suddenly. But they channel communication from beyond the grave. Since Saul has outlawed communication with spirits and therefore mediums, they've all gone underground. Where to find one? He sends some trusted servants in search of a medium, and they succeed in finding one in the far north village of Endor. The figure, later known as more familiar as the Witch of Endor, is really not a witch at all. She's a ghost wife, a medium, a conjurer, closely connected to the ghosts of people who've passed to the other side. Given his edict against consulting spirits and engaging mediums, and needing to travel deep in behind enemy lines, this village would have been north and east of where the Philistines were camped, Saul finds it necessary to travel incognito, puts on a costume, in order to call on this ghost wife of Endor. Not surprising, she is deeply suspicious of this midnight visitor. Look, you yourself know what Saul did, that he cut off the ghosts and the familiar spirits from the land, and why do you entrap me to put me to death? Saul reassures her that he himself will protect her, that she will not be held liable for conjuring the spirit that he desires to consult. So she gives in to Saul's demand, and sure enough, a ghostly figure slowly arises from the mist of the dark night. When the ghost wife recognizes the full-blown figure that stands before her, that she's called up, she screams in terror. Not so much because she recognizes the ghostly, godlike figure of Samson that Saul has specifically asked her to conjure, but more because in seeing Samuel, the great spokesperson for their God, Yahweh, she realizes that the disguised figure who has engaged her is Saul, the king, who by edict has condemned her to death. But true to his word, Saul threatens no consequence for the ghost wife. He's eager to hear what the ghostly figure may be able to tell him. The ghost of old Samuel is clearly peeved. "Why have you troubled to summon me up?" Bowed low in respect for the spirit of this holy man, Saul lays out his dilemma. He's on the eve of a great battle. He has no idea how to proceed, and he's in terror of the possible consequences. He's tried all the known avenues for finding God's guidance, Yahweh's guidance, and he's come up empty. What's he to do? The still irritated ghost of the old prophet priest ominously reminds the king of what he already knows. "And why do you ask me when the Holy One has turned away from you and become your foe? And the Holy One has done to you as spoken through me, and the Holy One has torn the kingship from your hand and given it to your fellow man, to David. Inasmuch as you did not heed the voice of the Holy One, and you did not carry out God's burning wrath against Amalek, therefore has the Holy One done this thing to you this day. If Yahweh will not attend the dishonored king, why would the spirit of Yahweh's great spokesperson oblige?" But the spirit of Samuel actually does have an ominous word for Saul. "And the Holy One shall give Israel too, together with you, into the hands of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your sons are with me. You die tomorrow. The camp of Israel too shall the Holy One give into the hand of the Philistines. All is lost." With this message, the tall, handsome, strong, once powerful king of the Israelites flings himself to the ground in full realization of what awaits him. He's desolate, and rightly so. Here ends today's ghost story. A ghost story, an ancient legend, a mighty myth purported to be about the importance of paying attention and following the word of God or suffering the consequences. It's not a picture of God that we want to embrace. We don't believe that God withholds God's self from us or punishes us with death and destruction for disobedience. And we certainly don't want to worship a God who orders genocide, then kills off the king who doesn't comply. Still, the choices we make do have consequences. At least one commentator suggests the meaning and moral of this old ghost story is the importance of listening, of paying attention to the Holy One, and of following God's way. If you cut yourself off from God, if you choose to go your own way, if you decide, "I can do it all myself, I don't need any help," you distance yourself from all that God offers. As you've heard me say before, and you'll hear me say again, infinite grace is always available. All we need to do is turn toward that grace and embrace it. If Saul had just chosen to listen, to pay attention, to follow faithfully, we may have had a very different story, maybe no ghost story at all. And if he repented, turned around, even at the word of old Samuel risen from the grave, Yahweh might have extended the grace of forgiveness. In one sense, Saul seems clueless, which is not such a good thing for the king. I don't know Maybe I'm chasing after spirits here. Perhaps this interpretation is a bit of a stretch, I don't know. Maybe I'm chasing after spirits here. Perhaps this interpretation is a bit of a stretch, a thin apologetic for an old ghost story, just because it's in the Bible, and I had to come up with something for Spooky Sunday. The Bible tells me so. So do the Fairview folks, you Fairview folks. Originally, I decided that the clever thing to do would be a word search for witches in the Bible, thinking that would be in the spirit of Fairview's playful inclusion of Halloween among its great festival days. But actually, I couldn't find any witches in the Bible, at least not in the way we've come to envision them. No pointed caps. Sorry about that, Bong Long. No pointed caps, no black cats, no jet-powered broomsticks. Sorry, Harry Potter. What came closest was this old tale of necromancy, of the ghost wife of Andor, who conjures the spirit of the prophet priest Samuel. Now, a medium is not a witch. A medium, as I said, communicates with spirits of the dead. Of course, you can play with the idea of a medium and the whole concept of communicating with the dead. That's some of what we do on Halloween, right? Just think of anybody beside me ever seen Noel Coward Zaney play Blythe Spirit or watch the old movie? Anybody knows Blythe Spirit? Oh, I recommend it. Watch Blythe Spirit. Noel Coward. I was privileged a few years ago to see a wonderful live production with Angela Lansbury as the medium, hilarious at 85, still trotting the stage six nights a week, amazing. Blithe spirit, zany play. On the other hand, there are people and cultures who take such communication quite seriously. The huge popularity, for instance, of the Harry Potter sequence, which I just watched episode 6. I've got 2 more to go of the movies. I've read all the books. The wonderful witch, Professor McGonagall, right? Played by Maggie Smith, or the great wizard, Dumbledore. Think today of that Mexican tradition of Dios de la Muerte. If you haven't seen it, try to find the wonderful commercial from Doritos Mexico. Who knew there was Doritos Mexico? I didn't until I watched this commercial. This commercial from Doritos Mexico that features a spectral visit from an old woman's dead brother over a bowl of chips placed at the shrine, the traditional shrine created for the Day of the Dead. These shrines, you bring food, a food offering, often for the departed, and you put it on the altar. Appearing alongside the brother in this animated commercial, we see, surprisingly, that he has a loving male partner on the other side, beyond the grave. Ironically, it's the younger members of this animated family who seem disconcerted, whose eyes roll or eyes get wide. But the old woman, she beams with joy as she claps her hands and expresses her relief that her beloved brother is not spending eternity alone. It's an unexpected and touching moment of grace, come alive from beyond. Silly, unscientific, irrational, I suppose you could argue all those things. But since today is Halloween, I invite you to suspend your disbelief. Watch the commercial. Watch Harry Potter. See what comes when you create your own Dios de la Muerte shrine to a loved one, and offer some chips or some kids' candy or some delicacy at the altar. Read a ghost story or two. Listen for a voice from beyond. Pay attention to some mysterious, not readily tangible dimension of reality and see if there is something for you yet to be learned. At least it's worth playing with the idea. Reversing his emphasis, I like my friend Jim Hopkins' reminder for us in today's words of preparation that though it not need be a way of life, pretending can be great fun. I hope you're having some fun on this spooky Sunday. The end. Please join me in this litany of response written by my friend Abigail Hastings from Judson Memorial Church in New York City. It bridges the gap, since to some degree, between Halloween and All Saints' Day. She writes, "We come again to a time when mortals play out the battle of good and evil. Before the goodness of the saints is delivered to us, we must face the dark night, don our courage, wear it like a shield, and say boo to the darkness before it engulfs us. We make play of our fears. We cover our faces, disguise our bodies. We peer out into that world of shadows and light, and we think for a time we can prevail. But the dark night of the soul will come around again, and that ability to meet it once more make saints of us all. For the questions, for the doubt, for the despair and longing, for the joy that comes in the morning, we turn to God for a place to be, a respite and safe haven, a gathering of souls. This is such a place. Here we are given the time to know and be known, to enter into worship and communion, to puzzle out the trick and celebrate the treats. Now we go out to carry the light to our neighbors near and far, living into our hope for God's beloved community. Amen."